Please, please, it's too much winning. We can't take it anymore. Mr. President, it's too much. And I'll say, no, it isn't. We have to keep winning. We have to win more.
You fought in the Clone Wars?
Yes. I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father.
Johnny, what's the difference between us and them? Because we live here.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
How's it going, everyone? This is your host, TJ Martinell, of the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. I'm coming to you as usual from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. The date is May 23rd, 2022. Another 15 days to flatten the curve. So it's a Monday for if someone's listening to this years from now. It is a Monday. Monday morning. And yesterday was an absolutely beautiful day. After weeks and weeks and weeks of just rain, cloudiness, cold weather. So I got up, like probably around this time, got on my motorcycle, went for a quick ride in the countryside. It was great weather. It was still a little cold. I mean, it was probably just below 50. And I just wasn't, I can't ride in cold weather. It's just, I have to bundle up like an astronaut. And especially when I'm riding on roads that I'm not familiar with, you get nervous and all that kind of stuff. I've been riding for 2 years, so I'm not I've improved since my initial year riding, but then it's just about being precautious, that kind of thing. I think it's also a mindset. But then later on in the day, I think for riders, know what I mean, when you have that mindset where you're just like, you feel like Chuck Yeager and, you know, you want to chase that demon. So I was out riding and just, you know, having a blast. I was on Highway 2, for those of you who can consult your Google Maps. So yeah, weather was spectacular. Very, very beautiful views of the rural areas that I live around. And then there's, of course, the mountains in the background. It's those kind of moments that make life worth living in this area. That was what I was kind of thinking yesterday. It's like the days like yesterday are the days that you, I think we all know what I'm trying to get at. I'm just not being very good at articulating it right now. It's the moments that you hope for. It's the experiences that that keep you going through the bad days. The days when you're just not, things are not going right. The weather's awful. Projects you're working on aren't being done right. You've had disappointments in some area of life, you know, a car broke down or whatever it is. I'm just throwing out random stuff. But then you're out there, it's beautiful, it's sunny. There's, you drive into a small town, it's kind of a tourist town, and there's a lot of attractive women there. And there's just everything. Also, there was tons of motorcyclists on the road, which was also great. Everybody salutes each other. So it was just kind of one of those days. It was just, everything went perfectly. Oh, key point. The temperature was perfect. It was like low 70s. So I felt great in the motorcycle when I was riding. Didn't feel cold at all. Wasn't overheating. And more importantly, when I stopped at an intersection or I was just going out and about, I wasn't heating to death. I mean, if it gets to be in the high 70s or 80s, I have to shed a few inner shell layers. But at the same time, my boots are black, my pants are black, I'm gonna get hot. I'm one of those guys who sweats really easily, so I can hike in 0 degree weather with very few layers on me while I'm hiking. The moment I stop, though, that's when I gotta throw stuff back on. So no, it was great. I was actually contemplating for a while not getting back on my bike for a long time because I was just watching a lot of bad driving on the roads. But I think also some of it is I just perception of fear. Like, are you afraid of the vehicles around you? Are you afraid of being hit? If you are, if that's your mindset, you probably shouldn't be riding that day. You know, there's some days where you almost feel like I don't want to say disconnected, but you feel as though the cars, you feel like you're part of almost another. Am I the only one who ever experiences this, where you almost have this just lack, I guess, fearlessness, where it's you just have this feeling that these cars will not hit you, like you don't have to be. I used to have this fear when I was first driving, where I was like, well, what if this car doesn't stop when they need to stop? What if this car doesn't slow down when they need to slow down? You know, what happens if all these other things that I just you have this fear of, oh, this car behind me is going to rear end me because they're not going to stop. Just that kind of thing, which is actually a huge problem if you're on a motorcycle. But that wasn't the case with yesterday. This isn't actually not going to be the topic of this podcast, actually. And I did not say what the episode title is. It's going to be, I'd say, Make Mental Asylums Great Again episode. I'll be getting into that in a few minutes, but I want to keep going with the motorcycle thing. I don't know. Motorcycles are really fun to ride around, and with gas prices the way they are, I might be riding on it. Oh, but this is what's ki guys, this is what's killing me. I would be riding it a lot more if the weather was just better. Like all this whole like cloudy 50 degrees stuff, I will not ride. And also with the like I'm looking at the weather forecast. It's supposed to rain almost every day this let me double check. We're gonna be precise. Yes, it is going to rain every single day this week. And it is going to be between the 60s and the 40s. I mean, imagine if it was like a crisp 55 or 60 degrees in the morning and 71 degrees, 75 degrees is a high. And it's sunny. Yes. Like, yes. You must ride. There's no debate about it. At some point, I got to get some satchels for the back of the bike. Just everything is so freaking expensive right now. And I could improvise, but I got to make sure it's not going to hit the muffler. That thing does get hot. In case people have never ridden before. And the reason I was actually going to talk about the Make Mental Asylums Great Again is I'll get to, as I'm want to do, we need to start treating mental health or mental illness as an infectious disease, as a public health issue. So that's it. If you're pressed for time, that is the conclusion I'm going to reach in this episode. That is the I will be genuinely, actually, fundamentally brief snippet. And the reason I wanted to talk about that is because I had a recent encounter this past week with a mentally ill person in the context of a place I go to that I frequent. And the mentally ill guy was what I would refer to as emotionally violent. And I'm going to need to be very precise because as I was talking to a woman about this yesterday, she understood what I was talking about, but she's also been frustrated with how people don't understand what we're getting at. The man was clearly mentally ill. He wasn't a big guy, but everything about him was this is how a person behaves when what he was expressing was rage at a particular person and the owner of the business. And everything about his body language, tone, demeanor, everything was, could physically attack. I'm angry enough to want to physically attack you at any moment. Now, the owner of this business could have torn him apart physically. He's a strong guy. That's not what I was worried about. What I was worried about is him at that moment pulling out some sort of like box cutter knife or just some sort of weapon. And, you know, if you're well trained or you're prepared for it, which I think he was, you can avoid it. But Mike, I think, but then finally the sheriff's deputies show up and they escort him out. And the mentally ill guy, one of his relatives shows up and says, yeah, he's got to be in a mental hospital. And this caused me to reflect on discussions that I've had for several years with people. For those who are not familiar, the United States used to have many mental health institutions. They had mental asylums. They had places where if someone was acting mentally ill, they were either voluntarily or forcibly incarcerated. And this meant that mentally ill people were separated from the rest of society. It was acknowledged that this behavior was not normal. People were not exposed to mentally ill behavior. And they also knew not to take it seriously. Meaning, not to take it as, oh, this person's in their right mind, or we need to take what they're saying seriously. But then, at some point, we just started dismantling all of our mental health hospitals. We started gutting the mental health system. And this mindset was that mentally ill people have rights, that they have that forcing, locking them up is inhumane, that there was abuse going on at these mental hospitals, because obviously these people are mentally ill. They're also forcibly incarcerated. Like, they are not allowed to leave. And so the argument is it's a violation of the rights and all that other kind of stuff. And my first go-to is, okay, how is that working out? Because here's my belief. This is a theory. It is a hypothesis. It is a gut instinct. I don't have facts or statistics to back it up. But sometimes you don't need facts and statistics and data to put two and two together. My belief is that many people who would have been otherwise forcibly incarcerated for mental illness, or who would have been checked into a mental hospital, that their behavior would have been identified as being that of a mentally ill person. Instead, they were allowed to remain in regular society, and they were allowed to engage in their mentally ill behavior with no consequences. And what they did may or may not have been illegal, but their behavior affected other people. It affected maybe, the first primary thought I have is it affected their children. This is something that people really don't think about, is that an adult being exposed to something is different than a child being exposed to something, because a child's brain and body, everything about them is developing. You know, you're developing until you're in your 20s. And their mind and emotions and psychological condition are being shaped by mentally ill behavior. Or they are forced to see stuff in other people, and our society doesn't really have a good way of explaining it. So this is what really got me thinking about this is The mentally ill guy that we dealt with. There were no children in the vicinity at the time, but it could have escalated the situation a lot more if there had been a child there. Because the kid, let's say they're 5 years old, they don't understand what's going on. They don't have context for that. And, you know, who knows if mommy and daddy are going to be able to explain to them or are willing to say, this is a mentally ill person and he needs to be locked up and his behavior is not okay. Because what ends up happening in most cases is somebody says the mentally ill person's a victim, you know, we feel sorry for him and he needs help. And that doesn't necessarily, that's not necessarily wrong. What is wrong is to let pity turn into permissiveness, where we allow. So this guy is yelling at the sheriff's deputies in a way that, and behaving in a way that if I were a police officer, the guy would be eating the curb. So this is probably why it's good I'm not a police officer. They were very well restrained with dealing with this guy. You know, and they're doing everything possible to avoid use of force. You know, they want the guy to come along quietly. And the problem is that it's like, again, I'm going to continue to use the analogy mental illness is an infectious disease. So if someone came into a business with a known infectious disease, you don't sit there and negotiate with them. You get them out of there. And when I say infectious disease, I'm not talking about like a minor flu. I'm not talking about like COVID. I'm talking about, let's say they had smallpox, right? If somebody came into, you know, of course I would say, well, I'm vaccinated. So I have a legitimate vaccine for that one, smallpox. Like I'm not worried about getting smallpox because I got a vaccine that actually vaccinates you. It's amazing. It's science, guys. But let's say it was a disease that nobody had an immunity to. It's like, no, you get them out of there. You don't negotiate. You don't let, like, the longer they stay, the more likely they are to infect someone. So there was a lot of negotiation in my mind, and this is just me, is you tell them that they get to decide if they're going to leave voluntarily or not. If they refuse, you don't continue arguing with them. You just drag them out. Because in my mind, it's as an infectious disease, people who have mental health issues need to be removed so that they do not infect other people. Because I believe that many people's mental health problems are ultimately the result of not like something in them, but something that someone else infected them with their mental illness. And, you know, there's a couple ways. I think one of the problems is people aren't able to identify mentally ill behavior, and so they consider it normal, or they're confused by it. And I think that explains, you know, not trying to get too pessimistic with these podcasts. I think that this is the fine line that we have to walk in these discussions, is that if we want to solve problems, not solve problems, but just be, one of the ways to become, to improve your mental health is to understand what's going on in the world around you. But that it requires you saying things that aren't always pleasant. And the reality is that in a peaceful, in a society where violence isn't allowed, the mentally ill will always have an advantage over the sane, because the mentally ill people will engage in behavior that is beyond the dignity and self-respect and I guess sense of like just shame of an ordinary person. I mean, mentally ill people will simply overwhelm sane, ordinary people. And you know, there's different types of mental illness. There's some types of guys who are just men and women who are just they're easygoing, they're friendly, they're just not right in the head. They're a little eccentric, they're just whatever. And then there's people who have genuine mental health problems that are destructive. Narcissistic personality disorder, you have bipolar disorder, you have you know, all these different relationship dynamics as far as just how things. I think one of the biggest problems is not so much the mentally ill, it's that people aren't taught that that certain types of behavior is not acceptable, and that we see people who engage in these destructive behaviors as victims, and we can't judge them. I mean, I've repeatedly seen people engage in, frankly, just malignant narcissism, and because we've taught to see mentally ill people as victims rather than people who are in who have an infectious disease, people feel like they can't confront them. I mean, this is why I believe, to some extent, if you are succeeding in, and I'm being very, 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 I'd say, nuanced with this comment. If you're doing very well in certain types of mainstream institutions, it's because you are dysfunctional. Or it's because, and this is another point that I would say for someone who says, well, mentally ill people don't affect me. I would say, that's, you know, either you're immune or something, but I would say that might have something's wrong with you too. I mean, did you think about it this way? There was that movie World War Z or whatever, and all the zombies are chasing after healthy, ordinary people and completely leaving the sick people alone. I mean, maybe that, I mean, that's kind of my, I was thinking about that analogy. I was thinking, yeah, maybe that's part of the problem is if you are not impacted or affected or disturbed, if you are not disturbed by mentally ill behavior in a lot of, you know, regular context, that might have a reflection on your own mental health. It doesn't disturb you because you don't see it as disturbing. You see it as just ordinary. And some people manage to hide, manage to express their mentally ill behavior in different ways. And some are manage to be more subtle about it. Some people manage to do it. I mean, there's the facade. There's the shell. Like, for example, let's take Alex Jones, for example, right? Very over the top, very bombastic. Some would say he's a little crazy. But what if he was to present his statements in the same way as an NPR reporter? Very calm, very, you know, this is another thing people I get confused on when they think of mentally ill. They think of someone who seems erratic, out of control, like they're not able to control themselves. No, a lot of mentally ill people are actually very successful in life. Think about it like this. There's drug addicts who live in Skid Row in LA, and then there's drug addicts that are millionaires two blocks down who go to the Academy Awards because they also are addicted to drugs. They're just able to function. But this also is another interesting dynamic, I guess one of the problems, you know, there's guys who who've really pushed men because it's always, you know, always pushing the men to do this, to like retake institutions, retake organizations, retake all this stuff. And I can just tell you guys, that's very, the idea is legitimate in terms of like, it's a noble idea. Like, yeah, we want to retake control of stuff. Here's the problem. That requires you being exposed to mentally ill behavior by people in control. And this is how mentally ill people take over institutions. They work their way in. They get into positions of power. They seek out people that they can manipulate and control. And then they start engaging in incredibly disturbing, shameless behavior towards anyone that they see as a threat. And the ordinary people can't fight it because you have to stoop to another, you have to stoop to a certain level. And also it's just the toxicity drives you away. Because these people also drain you emotionally. Because they're beyond reason, they're beyond, when you're dealing with someone who only understands violence, and you're in a non-violent society, you're in a society where violence is not acceptable. I did that whole podcast on last week. There's nothing you can do. And so it's just repeated for a man, it's repeated emasculation. Where somebody engages in behavior that for a normal man, you would be allowed to kick the living tar out of him. Instead, he can look at you and smile and smirk, or it could be a woman. They can basically look at you and know that they're taunting and mocking you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Because we're seeing this all throughout our country right now, where people have consolidated power. They've kicked out all the people who won't say yes to everything that they order, and now they can just engage in behavior that's incredibly destructive, and they can have cute smugness about it because there's nothing you can do because we live in a nonviolent society. We live in a society where only certain types of people under very specific types of circumstances, and for certain reasons, are allowed to engage in violence. This is not necessarily related, but I just want to throw this in there. You know how those guys who talk about, real men and they're teaching about what it means to be a man? Notice they never talk about setting boundaries or leaving environments where it is not healthy for you to be in. I'm not specifically talking geographic. I'm just saying I never hear them say, hey, this situation is, if you're in this situation, is not healthy for you as a man, and you need to leave. If you're, it can be a friendship, it can be a girlfriend, it can be a workplace, it could be a nonprofit that you volunteer with, whatever it is, you're never taught that you have a right to leave. Right, it's as if you, under no circumstances can you leave. It's this very weird sense of like learned helplessness or learning to cope with an environment, as opposed to saying no, you should just leave it. You know, there's my real men, there's certain things that you just do not tolerate. Well, that's getting off on a tangent. We'll stick with the mentally ill thing. But that's part of the problem, is that you get boxed in where there's just nothing you can do as being a sane, rational, logical person with dignity. And there's certain things that you just don't do because it's beyond your ethics. But mentally ill people either don't know what they are or they don't care. And I think the mentally ill, the most destructive, are people who are aware that it's there, they just don't care, or they think that they're special and the rules don't apply to them. And I think it's not so much the mental asylums, I think, is actually not the worst part. Got something in my throat. The dismantling of the mental health system is not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is people thinking that mentally ill behavior makes someone a victim and they need to be coddled and felt sorry for and not have boundaries set with them because they're victims. as opposed to my perspective that you're mentally ill, you have a disease, you could potentially infect other people, including children, and then they go on to infect someone else. We need to have you quarantined. You need to leave. And, you know, I remember, you got to wonder how many people act mentally ill. This is another interesting thing I didn't think about until just now. How many mentally ill people are actually not mentally ill? Like I said, being mentally ill is a superpower in our modern society. If you act mentally ill, people don't hold you to any kind of standard. They see you as a victim that who can't be judged. So how many people out there who are engaging in destructive behavior do it because it gets what they want and no one holds them accountable? Like, imagine if we started locking up people for engaging in certain types of behaviors. Just like, yeah, you have a mental illness and you need to be quarantined. How many of those people would change their behavior? And how many of the people who say that these people are victims, the genuinely mentally ill, are people who engage in mentally ill behavior not because they have it, but because they see that it gets their I guess it is a form of mental illness where they're thinking of things purely from a power position. Everything is a power. Like, does this give me more control and power? If it does, I'll engage in the behavior. Like, if being nice and kind and generous and selfless actually got results, they would probably engage in that behavior too, because it's ultimately about being in control. And it gets you what you want in life. And maybe that's one of the reasons that they say, oh, they're victims, we can't judge them, because they identify with the behavior. And when they say they need help, you know, think about it this way. The emphasis is always on helping the mentally ill person as opposed to protecting ordinary people from the effects of being exposed to mental illness. Because here's another problem with having mentally ill people in part of society. The behavior becomes, you get normalized. It becomes normalized. It becomes just commonplace to see that stuff, as opposed to saying, no, that's, it's like, it, you know, frankly, you don't want to see, what was, there was that movie Silver Linings Playbook where the main character is in a mental hospital and his mom has come to get him out. She's gotten a court order allowing him to leave the hospital as long as he behaves. And one of the hospital staff says, we don't want him to leave. He's just starting to get used to the place. And his mom looks at them in horror and says, I don't want him to get used to this place, right? It's because it's not a place he's going to be staying forever. He wants, you know, you don't want to get used to an environment where, you know, you have to constantly take pills in the morning and show people that you've actually taken it. You're not allowed to leave. You have I've never been in one, obviously, so I don't know what it's like there. But you don't want that stuff to become normalized. In the same way, you don't want behavior to be normalized in society. You don't want people to look at this stuff and say, oh, this is commonplace. It shouldn't be. And then people go back to, well, we can't forcibly lock people up. That is a legitimate discussion to have, but regardless, there's certain types of behavior, and this is also where the whole, you know, the civil rights, civil liberties type thing, I would say, okay, guys, this is where you need to start understanding what's going on. Because this is where I think libertarians and libertarianism runs into and maybe there's a solution to it within the philosophy, I don't know. But this is actually, I'd say that the problem is, okay, in Ancapistan, in the libertarian utopia, there is no public property. So there's nowhere where mentally ill people can go and engage in behavior like this and claim that they have the right to be there. But this is us taking the current situation that is not the result of a purely privatized society and sticking it into an environment where, and what I mean by that is, this is the product of many things that are not the result of voluntary privatized society, I guess is what I'm saying. So people would come up with all these solutions. So yet you're dealing with something after the fact as opposed to being preventative. So they can occupy public spaces, or I'd say also, what do you do with after the fact where there's tons of mentally ill people in society and they control institutions? Like, I think that that's the big problem, is they control institutions and then you have tons of people, millions and millions of people who for a century have been educated by government. And part of that in recent years has been to teach them that they don't have that they don't have a right to set boundaries with other people. And that this kind of behavior is acceptable. I mean, this is the issue that the self-awareness factor comes into play. You know, there's the mentally ill by themselves don't have power. It's the people in their environment who enable it, who see them as victims, who refuse to hold them accountable, who identify with the behavior. And this is frankly the decay and rot and corruption in, I'd say, Western society in general over the past, you know, 60, 70 years. I mean, we could always keep going back, but you get my point. They say, people will say it's inhumane to lock people up. You know, it's inhumane to allow them to go around and traumatize people. It's inhumane to let them end up on the street and die. Like, there is no perfect silver bullet solution. I just know that us treating mental illness as a victim hood status rather than an infectious disease is not the way we should do this. We need to look at it from a public health perspective. And when you look at it from an infectious disease, your priority is, how do we keep this person from infecting other people? And if someone has been infected, they are been exposed. Like, you see what I mean? Oh, someone was exposed to a mentally ill person. They need help and treatment. Does anybody think about that? You know, when a person, and we're always thinking about homeless mentally ill. I'm thinking more of the ones, the worst are the ones that are high functioning. The Patrick Batemans of the world. The psychopaths, the sociopaths, the narcissistic ones, they're the ones that are high functioning and yet their behavior is clear and evident. You know, when someone's engaging in that kind of behavior, do it towards other people, towards people that they have power over, do we ever think that they need to be, you know, everybody talks about how, you know, the mental ill need to be treated. Well, you know what? So do the people who've been victims, legitimate. Isn't that interesting? We don't refer to people who've been exposed or suffered from behavior of a mentally ill person as the victim. You know, that's my thought with a lot of mentally ill people, is that no, they're not the victim. The people that they harm are the victims. And the worst thing that can be done is for them to think that this behavior is just normal, or that they somehow are responsible, or that this behavior is acceptable. Like, you see what I hope, hopefully you're following me down this path. That every the way we look at the way that the commonplace viewpoint is that these is wrong. The mentally ill have an infectious disease. They need to be quarantined and kept away from ordinary people. And people who've been exposed to it or suffered at the hands of it or, you know, have been harmed by it, those are the ones that need treatment because they didn't harm anybody. They didn't do anything wrong. And yet we don't. And so they go on to become an enabler or they get infected with the disease themselves and they carry it on with them. You know, call it contract tracing or something like that. You know, when isn't it interesting we're dealing with this whole COVID thing for the past 2 years and everybody's been worrying about that? Why don't we take that same approach to mentally ill, to the mentally ill people? You know, whether we bring back mental hospitals or insane asylums or we forcibly incarcerate people, you know, let's start with the easy part or the first principle, which is a change in mindset and philosophy. So I hope you enjoyed that episode. My books don't really have anything to do with mentally ill people. If you if you enjoy a good book, you can pick up my books on my website. I got everything from dystopia to 1930s pulp noir, and there's Song of Wolfgar, that's a story set in the Enchantments. You can look it up on Google. And then there's the Iridian, that was the one that's a combination of Star Wars, Casablanca, and the Maltese Falcon. I enjoyed writing it. You absolutely will enjoy reading it as much as I did writing it. And then I got a couple of, what are the books? Oh yeah, if you like The Legend of Zelda, The Legend of Frenya is also on Amazon or terrorhousepress.com. That's where you can find my books and also find prior episodes of my podcast. So thank you once again for listening to the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. This is your host, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. Signing off.